Am I live? Hola Madre Distas, welcome back to another episode of Let's Be Real podcast. You guys know the drill. If you're new here, don't forget to smash the likes and subscribe to the channel. We are on the road to 2K. Where should we begin, right? This was a classic that was supposed to be Xavi's fight back. Was supposed to be Barcelona's second shot at the title. Was supposed to be Catalonia's last hope in overthrowing the political incorrectness of Madrid on the pitch, off the pitch. But seems like off the pitch and on the pitch, we seems to be winning. And we seems to be winning with a certain kind of swagger that has long been associated with our club and with our players. Tonight, if you're looking at the purists tuning in, they would be not too pleased with what was on offer from, you know, two of the top teams in Spain. But what we got, in fact, because of the large amount of, you know, errors and kind of inconsistencies was an absolute spectacle that couldn't really take your eyes off. Our team basically was drained, right? We could see that from a lot of players' body languages, their overall effort to say, you know, effort is the wrong one maybe, but you get my gist. But still, like, we knew that going into this game, a draw would, you know, place us super nicely heading into the last 5-6 games of the season. And a draw was kind of like what Mo was mentioning in the group chat that Carlo would like. But I still felt like, you know, like if there were one team that could nick the win, it would be us. And that proved to be true. Super happy, super happy. We'll delve into it a bit more. Big up the chat. Big up Mo. First of all, man, like, talk to me. How's it going? And yeah, Clásico, another Clásico win, another Clásico Bellingham 90 plus two winner. Not hearing anything, Mo. I think, yeah, Deron just mentioned they can't hear a word. Guys, please let us know in the chat if you can hear us. Yeah.
I don't know.
Can you guys hear us?
Because I can see mic audio levels here on my end on the OBS stream.
No audio, more audio. Okay, enough. So it's just more audio. Ashik, is my audio
can
fine?
You guys hear us?
Because I can see. Yeah, okay, I think it's fixed now because I can see audio levels on my end and I checked the stream. Yeah, so it's working.
Okay.
Yeah,
it's up. Yeah,
yeah, it's
fair
up.
Enough. So I think I gotta do the intro again.
No, it wasn't your. I think it was mine. I kind of muted the mic in between, so I think it disconnected my connection to OBS.
Right, fair enough. So it was just your audio.
Yeah, it was just mine.
Yeah, go for it, Mo. Talk to me again. Pretty uplifting win after, you know.
Yeah,
after,
man, like week, I said, you know, midweek. I went on the, you know, I went in an uncharacteristic tirade where I like kind of. Praised myself because I said I prayed, you know, namaz before the match and prayed for a Real Madrid victory, and it happened. So, you know, all credits to me. Florentino Perez can give me a call anytime. But, you know, with that aside, like I said, like, I mean, it was a happy week because we beat Pep Guardiola in midweek. We went to the semifinals, and now, you know, beating Xavi and probably taking an unassailable
lead. Bet the daddy first and then the son second, right?
Definitely. I mean, I don't know what is Laporta. Is he the grandfather?
He should be the butler at this point. But yeah.
Yeah, but whatever, man. I mean, it was a pretty good win. I mean, Real Madrid. You know, I came to this thinking that you might be a little disappointed, but you know, seeing you all positive and everything, I'm a little thrown off my track. So let me just collect my thoughts.
100%. I mean, you know me, right? Like, I'm not like a guy who thrives on, you know, how football should be played, or, you know, like if I don't see the team really being proactive, like, I don't mind. Like, if we play the game to what the game basically asks us of, and, you know, not as bad as how we faced against City, obviously, like, I was a bit disappointed in the way we set up, but the result basically took my gripes away. you know, the result and how we managed to basically fight back adversity.
A certain British fella might have something to do with it, I think.
Not just that. Obviously, I'm happy for Bellingham, but Bellingham in general, his offensive forays has been, you know, like on the decline a bit. And it could be, like we talked about, you know, it could be fatigue, could be that he's playing through a bit of pain and whatnot. But still, like we all knew, people mistake my undermining of Bellingham's performance ever since the turn of February for thinking that he doesn't affect games. He affects games. What I want from Bellingham and the bar he has set is not just to affect games, but to, you know, decide games. And when he's off physically, you know, that takes him out of the equation a bit. But tonight, again, he was not at his optimal best. We can all see that. Anyone with eyes can see that Bellingham is not, you know, moving the way he wants to. But still, he's super effective. His tenacity, his aggressiveness, his you know, his desire to win back possession, his desire to go help out teammates. It's all there. It's all there. It's a given. But you know, that little mythical you know, quotient was kind of off for the last, you know, couple of months or so. But yeah, tonight he came up big. But the performance in general, like we'll have to big up, you know, the players before we kind of, you know, start breaking down how they were lacking in certain departments. To play a game of this magnitude, you know, 4 or 5 days after we had to, you know, battle out City for a spot in the semi-finals, I really have to give it to the players. You know, like you could see that it was not just physically training, it was mentally training as well. The players stuck in, they stuck through, and they came out on top, man. Like you could see every time they, you know, managed to peg us back, we just grew even more motivated to, you know, find the next advantage. And that basically, you know, I think paved the way to open up, what is it now, 11 point lead at the top.
Yes, 11 point lead.
11 point lead at the top. I mean, like, I don't think I've ever felt mini title celebration inside me, you know, in all my years following and supporting our club. This is too early for my liking, but
I can definitely see you being happy because you're smiling now. And I think I wasn't expecting, you know, coming into this stream, Sunil smiling wasn't on my bingo book, so, you know. You can just say
I don't know why you expect me to be so hard to be pleased.
I'm happy that you're pleased. I'm not saying that you're too hard to please. I'm just saying I'm happy to see you pleased. It wasn't something I was expecting because I felt kind of like maybe some of the
talk to me more about that
in the first game, you know, in the first half especially. I think
first half, yeah
it kind of felt flat, so I don't know, I was kind of like, you know, it's not
expecting. Let's talk about how we consider the first goal then. You know.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, Lunin, was Lunin at fault, or was it a combination of, you know, Lunin, the marking in general from set pieces?
I think you have to give credit to Barcelona because they figured out what our defense's weakness was. First of all, for me, I kind of didn't understand why Ancelotti didn't start with Nacho. Maybe there's a reason and we don't know it, because like I knew Carvajal was injured, I knew Mendy was injured, but I didn't know that Nacho was
out. Carvajal is injured? Like, I didn't know that. Like, does he have a...
He walked off from the last game, right? Everybody was expecting
him to make it. Oh, yeah.
But I think he was in the lineup, but yeah, kind of expected Lucas to play. So, you know, it kind of gives him a break because I think he's going to play against Sociedad as well, because, like, I think somebody was mentioning a group chat, was it Moose or somebody, that Bayern, he's going to be suspended, Carvajal's going to be suspended. So, you know, it gives him some time to recover, and I don't know how Ancelotti wants to approach it. But yeah, coming back to the game, I think I was kind of surprised Nacho wasn't starting. So Barcelona took full advantage of it. I think Andreas Christensen has had a new lease of life playing as a CDM, and you know, they totally exploited the fact that we didn't have the numbers to contain them aerially. And
so it was deliberate, yeah, to drop off Pedri from the starting 11.
I think Xavi. So, because Pedri has also been injured, right? So there's also questions about his fitness because he keeps getting injured, you know, so they have to manage him as well. So for me personally, that was one issue. The second one, like I already said in the group chat, you know, for me, Lunin has always had this issue where if you put up the ball in a particular region of the box, he kind of has trouble making a decision. You know, he takes a little bit more time to make that decision that other elite goalkeepers might be making in like, you know, within seconds. Lunin kind of takes a little bit more time to do that. So I think he was late coming in, and he kind of looked like a fish out of water. You know, the ball totally went past him, and Christensen had a tap in. And I mean, Cruz, I don't know what Cruz was doing, but that happened. But in this situation, I think you kind of expect your goalkeeper to take charge. You know, getting that ball before anybody else does. I think if Courtois was there, you know, an uninjured Courtois, let's just say that, I think he's definitely getting that ball. He's definitely not making a mistake over there. So for me, yeah, I think it's a combination of factors, but yeah, it was probably, this was one of those.
And Lunin has been subject to this sort of, you know, exploits, even in midweek. You know, City really came in with the plan to basically put in balls, you know, in the 6-yard box, and, you know, kind of test his mental. And we saw that, you know, on a couple of occasions, like, he was backpedaling a bit, he was trying to, you know, gauge the trajectory of the ball, and then yeah, almost kind of tipped it over a couple of times. But tonight was in a similar vein. I thought he could have definitely, you know, predicted that, you know, they're gonna try something similar. And I think, was it in the second half or was it in the beginning of the second half? End of the first half, they had a corner, and the ball basically bounced between Tchouaméni and Lunin. It was nerve-wracking, to say the least, to watch that, you know, go harmlessly behind for a throw-in. But, like, my concern is that people are really, I think, gonna hone into what Lunin is about in the coming weeks.
Me personally, Lunin has like three big weaknesses. First of all, is this particular one where, you know, he has trouble dealing with some of the crosses when it comes to, you know, a particular area of the box. So I guess it's not about crosses, it's more about decision making. So some regions of the box, he doesn't really decide on time whether he should go for it or, you know, stay back and try to shop the shot. And the second one is the fact that his distribution, I think sometimes it kind of suffers. Because today as well, there was this point in time where I think he was trying to start a counter transition, and he punted the ball in an area where not enough players were. So that has been there. But then other times he also makes good decisions. So that gives me hope that more playing time, he's probably going to improve in that area as well. Because I think I fully expect him to improve with game time in the first area. Because, you know, Lunin, as we were talking, he doesn't really have that much of an experience in top level football. Because before this season, he never really had the run that he has had now. So I guess that really impeded his development before that. So with game time, with, you know, getting consistent minutes, it's obviously going to improve. But then there's a third one as well, which I think was responsible for the second goal that we conceded. This is something that I've seen in Lunin, like, ever since he's watched him play, you know.
His padding,
even when he was at Oviedo, you know, playing, getting consistent game time, although it was in the second division, he always has this thing where he saves the shot, but he always punts the ball back into the path of the opponent player. You know, so his direct redirectioning of the ball kind of needs improvement. So I think these three things Lunin definitely has to improve. I don't know how he will improve it if he doesn't get game time, because, you know, we don't know what's going to happen next season, especially with Courtois probably coming back in the next 2 weeks. I don't even know if Ancelotti is going to go with Courtois like for the remainder of the season, because when he was coming back earlier, you know, at the end of March, before the Athletic game, I think it was said that before Courtois got injured, if he hadn't got injured, he was going to start against Athletic Club and he was going to play against City. So I don't know what Ancelotti's plan is going to be now and what kind of condition he is, because I know he's back in training. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens with Lunin, especially what happens next season, because, you know, Lunin only has 1 year left on his contract. He's hired Jorge Mendes as his agent. So that's going to be an interesting situation.
Definitely, Lunin would really want minutes, you know, considering how great a season he has had in general. But talking about Thibaut coming back, like, I was pretty vocal regarding Thibaut basically walking back into the lineup. Like, I didn't think that was right. I think Lunin completely deserves his spot. And I think he's not going to be prone to, you know, such errors probably in the biggest of games. You know, like, I know tonight was not basically, you know, something that you can take a lot of confidence from, you know, going into the pivotal last month of the season. But I think Lunin has to be backed. The managers, I believe, will back him. I don't think, you know, Thibaut.
For me personally, I was on the opposite end of the spectrum, right? Because I kind of felt that as soon as Courtois comes back, he should be playing. But now, especially given how he has performed against City and everything, and now how he has been playing, I think, and also given that we don't really have that many games left, you know, it's going to be just like 2 or 3 weeks after Courtois comes back and the Champions League final. I don't think that's enough for Courtois to, you know, go back into prime Courtois form. So for me as well, I am kind of tending towards, you know, Ancelotti backing Lunin. But it all depends on what kind of fitness Courtois comes back, because if he is really back and he's like, he's at prime fitness, the coaching staff thinks that he is really looking sharp and everything, maybe they're going to back him. But like, yeah, but right now for me, I kind of have to agree with you that Lunin needs to be given that opportunity to close out the season at least.
Only the final looks like a realistic chance, but like, even if Thibaut came back like tonight, right?
I mean, Courtois is already back in training, so he's already...
I know, he's fit, like, so. By back, I mean back, but you know, back starting games, he'll only have 6 or so games in the league to really,
think,
you know...
Realistically, he could probably be back after the Bayern game, I think, maybe 2 weeks, you know, to get those physical fitness back. Maybe match sharpness wouldn't be there, but there's the Sociedad game and then there's the Bayern first leg. But after that, he could be back and we could potentially see him play in the final 5 games of the season, maybe even in the return leg of the Bayern game. But yeah, I mean, with Bayern as well, we saw that, right? As soon as Neuer was back, they kind of put him back into action. They didn't really care, like, who else was there, so.
But, like, who was Bayern's second keeper? Was that guy, Ulreich or something, no?
I think last season it was, like, I don't really remember who was playing. I've forgotten the name. But, like, for me personally, I think that is something you have to consider when you consider the fact that there's the goalkeepers like Neuer and Courtois, you know. They give you something extra. They have this experience and they have this presence 100%. In the box that, you know. 100%. Like Lunin, for all his efforts. We can praise Lunin to the end of the world, but the thing is, like, Courtois is always going to be better than him for me. So, you know.
Especially, he has a massive height advantage, massive advantage in terms of experience, in terms of big game moments.
That experience of the big game moment, you know, because Courtois has already been in the biggest games and already done that. So a manager like Ancelotti, who especially values experience, so that's already 2 out of 3 ticked. And, you know, then there's some decision making that obviously Courtois is better. The only question about him is going to be sharpness. So for me, that is the big thing. But I mean, as a human side, you kind of look at Lunin and think, man, this guy, what a story he has been this season, you know, because 100%. He was maligned like at the beginning of the season by the coaching staff itself, but then he fought his way back and everything that is happening, you know, even with his with the war and everything, but still he has like kept his head and, you know, delivered, stood up and delivered, taken everything on the chin and, you know, shown that mentality that Real Madrid players deliver. And then he comes to City and he puts on a performance for all time, you know, in the penalty shootout. So you kind of expect that this guy to, you know, end the season, but then this is Real Madrid. We always want the best. We always want to win Champions League.
Yeah.
Like Farouk would say, you know, no space for sentimentality.
Fair play. But, you know, the only reason why we're even talking about all this is because Lunin is giving us a chance. Lunin is, like, we are basically, like, I'm not neutral. Like, I'm pro Lunin this season in terms of, you know, he should absolutely keep his place. But, the neutrals or the detractors who are in the middle, like, he's basically paving way for them to come, you know, park into the equation, claiming that, well, you did give the ball away to Rafinha, which could have basically, you know, made it 1-0 inside the first 3-4 minutes. Stuff like that has to be completely taken out of the equation, and Lunin has to put in a performance akin to, you know, what he has been showing, you know, like against City, against Leipzig, for instance. You know, like, he has to have a very, very good vibe surrounding his overall composure, overall, you know, game management. Like, it should be somewhere close to perfection to keep the guys, you know, calling for Thibaut away.
Yeah, man, I think that's the thing, you know, consistency. He needs consistency, but he's not going to get that consistency unless he gets game time. And we kind of have to keep in mind that this is his first season, you know, for all intents and purposes, first season, you know, where he's playing consistent games in the first division. I mean, he probably had some games when he was in Ukraine and playing for Luhansk or everything. But I mean, with all due respect, like, La Liga is a completely different kettle of fish. Champions League is a different kettle of fish. So this guy, this is his first season. So obviously we can't expect him to have these ups and downs, you know, make some mistakes here and there. But this is Real Madrid. You don't really have space for it. So I kind of feel bad for him as well. But at the end of the day, I think the coaching staff has to decide whether they decide to back Lunin and let him close out the season, or, you know, give chance to Courtois to come back, regain his match sharpness in La Liga games that are remaining, you know, possibly after Sociedad or whenever he's coming back. But I think Lunin definitely, I think he's going to play the Bayern, the two legs with Bayern, but I don't know if he's going to play the final, depending on how, you know, the coaching staff handles the situation.
Let's move on from Lunin. Let's kind of talk about the first big chance we had of the game and then focus on Mini, right? Tchouaméni, brilliant lobbed, you know, slight dink in behind Barca's defense. You know, Modric had the presence of mind, albeit being, you know, 5'7", 5'8", to flick the ball around him to Vinicius. It's a tough chance, but this is what separates the best from the elite, right? And so many more chances, right? That was one instance where Vini was, like, the other instance where he was through on goal, Rodrigo on his side. He tries to basically be too clever. If it comes off, you look great. You're on the newspaper headlines tomorrow morning. But if it doesn't, you look kind of, yeah, you look kind of funny trying to pull that off when the clear and obvious decision is to, you know, slot it either side of Ter Stegen. Vinicius in general this season more has frustrated me beyond what I imagined he would, right? The frustration is not so much the fact that he has gone back on his finishing or kind of declined. It's in the essence of what I feel, right? It's the feeling from 3-4 years ago when he used to be absolutely batshit insane in terms of what to expect, you know, like when he was very, very poor. It's the same feeling that gets invoked inside me when I watch him, you know, who has improved very much so last season, come to this point of his career and is basically fluffing chances left, right, and center. If he was a lot more clinical, we wouldn't go into that City second leg in the way we did, right? Like, when will this stop is my question. I know this is formation he's playing. I didn't really, as an inside forward.
I didn't really watch the City game, so I can't really talk about that. And I mean, I kind of do share your sentiment when it comes to certain chances where I feel like Vinicius kind of needs to do better with the decision making. For me,
Are we asking too much from Vinny? More is my question. Like, are we asking him to bury low XG shots? No, right? Like, we are asking him to finish his dinner.
I mean, for today, I think the Rodrigo thing, he probably could have done better on that one, because instead of passing back to Rodrigo, he could probably have taken the shot himself, because I think in that situation, passing the ball back kind of gave Andres Christensen the time to, you know, run back and cover him up, so ruin the chance, you know. And like you said, I've said this before as well, I think sometimes Rodrigo and Vinicius, both of them, they kind of try to be too cute. They try to go for the spectacular instead of going for the fundamentals and just putting the ball in. But then at other times, especially today, like, I think there were a couple of chances where I felt that Vini got into good situations because of his pace. But in those situations, I think there were difficult chances to convert, especially the one where I think there was one where Lunin lobbed the ball and he kind of runs onto it, where I don't think anybody else would have made that run. And then there was this one where Jude also played the chance into the box, and I think Vini, because of his pace, is able to get on it, but he doesn't quite pull it off.
His touch basically, you know, shuts up.
No, even the second touch, they kind of took the ball away from him. But overall, I think he was the pace at which he was running to even get to the ball. It kind of makes you.
It's incredible. But I'm telling you,
Listen, the thing is, like, when you're running at that pace, getting off the perfect touch is not possible. So it's gonna happen.
I know.
For me, I don't really blame him for those situations, but I do blame him for situations like where he passed off the ball to Rodrigo instead of taking the shot. Do I blame him? Would I blame him if he hadn't scored in that situation? I don't know. But I mean, the thing is, like, even the situation where he started a shot straight at Ter Stegen, you know, with his left foot. For me personally, I felt like sometimes he has to add that variety where he kind of goes to the other side, you know. But the thing is, like, this
he's
time,
always going far post.
He's always, like, this time at Ter Stegen, he kind of went near post. So I kind of feel like sometimes he tries to be too, because I've always seen this with him. He always tries to find the smallest space possible and shoot between the keeper and the post. So that part, that bit of his game frustrates me, but I think that is what makes Vinicius Vinicius. You know, he's always trying to do the impossible, pull out the spectacular and everything. But then we also need to consider the fact that we don't really have a striker. So all the defensive, all the defenders are focused on him. The defensive attention is on him more than anybody else on the pitch. So that kind of impairs it, and I think that is kind of not helping him and Rodrigo get the shots. But I mean, you definitely have a point when you speak about the fact that they are trying to be too cute, to be too spectacular in certain areas where, you know, the fundamentals might help Real Madrid more. And I think at that point you have to be frustrated. And I mean, I share your sentiment, because even I am frustrated in those situations.
Yeah, like I disagree with the fact that, like, it might be your personal way of looking at it, but Rodrigo doesn't frustrate me as much. No chance.
I mean, he does have his
loss of head, but it's not anywhere near Vinicius's level.
Me personally, Rodrigo is the fact that when he came on, I kind of, like, everybody thought that there's this guy who keeps his head more calm than Vinicius, you know. But as time has went on, I've only seen him, like, I've only felt like he has given me evidence that it's not the case. Vinny might be more brash and swashbuckling from what we see, but, like, when it's in game time, or when it's even, like, you know, even off the pitch, when it comes about teams and everything, I think Vinny says he's more intelligent. He knows what he's doing. Whereas Rodrigo, I think he's, like, you know, let me put this way. If there is a guy who is calm and keeps his head, maybe like a Rafa Varane, you know, when he came at Real Madrid the first time, and we felt like this is the guy who really keeps his head. And when Rodrigo came on, we kind of had a similar vibe about him, you know, keeps his head, knows how to do it. But then he has gone from there towards, like, you know, if you remember Benzema in his first season at Real Madrid, this guy that gets a little bit petulant, a little bit, you know, he had trouble keeping his head on himself. And he kind of became brash and stuff. For me, Rodrigo has gone from that version of Varane to that version of Benzema when it comes to his, like, off the field stuff, as well as, you know, on the field decision making. So for me, Rodrigo, I think, yeah, he was decent today. Maybe he doesn't really frustrate you, but I've seen him multiple times trying to imitate Vinicius and go for the spectacular instead of doing what I think made us fall in love with him. Because when he first came on, he was always this guy who was calm, was making the right decisions, sticking the fundamentals, you know, doing the fundamentals right. But right now, I kind of don't get that vibe from him. Maybe he needs somebody, you know, an attacking leader to just guide him a little bit. Maybe that was the thing, that was the difference when Benzema was here, because later on, Benzema, like, kind of, you know, he really had that vibe about him, the leadership thing about him. But, like, right now, he's in there, and Vinicius and Rodrigo probably are struggling a little bit because of that. Maybe next season we can get a striker and the situation improves. But let's see.
100%. Moving on, Lucas Vazquez. Brilliant performance. Like, we have seen how much he basically, you know, lifts his game when big moments come calling. And tonight was not an exception. He just is one of those guys who just knows, you know, how to roll up his sleeves and, yeah, like, work his socks off. And just the essence of his overall personality comes to the forefront when someone begs for quality. And Vazquez, especially from right back, like, every game I've watched him this season is very, very threatening. And, like, I can't stress enough on the fact that he basically just commits people left and right. It helps that he's a winger by trade, has played as a winger throughout, you know, 90% of his career, but making late runs, be it being super neat and tidy with his passing, you know, his intelligent positioning, especially combining down the right, is a sight to behold. The day he walks off just like Nacho will be a tremendous loss for us. And the way he committed, Kubarsi, was it for the pen? Yeah, no chance.
I mean, even the dribble on Cancelo, I kind of think he kind of showed up what everybody was thinking. You know, like, everybody was going into this, hey, Cancelo is this, Cancelo is that. If you remember, at the start of the season, Real Madrid are going to regret missing out on Cancelo. Real Madrid should do this. I mean, Real Madrid are crazy to reject him, or, you know, whatnot. He kind of showed up why Real Madrid didn't want Cancelo. I mean, there was the off-field stuff, but I mean, even in play style, Cancelo is, like, way terrible at defending. So Lucas Vazquez showed it. But going back to your earlier point about him being, you know, as important as Nacho, I think both Nacho and Lucas Vazquez have been, like, you know, I think it was Steve McManaman who used this term, or it was Ian Dark, I don't really remember who it was, but they said that they were squad players plus plus. So these guys have the quality, you know, they're too good to be squad players, but they have chosen to be squad players at Real Madrid because that is how much they love, you know, this club. I think both Nacho and Lucas, if they had chosen to go elsewhere, they could have had more important roles, especially, you know, Nacho. If he had decided to go to maybe a Sevilla or some other team, he could really have been, he could probably have put like appearance records for them. But he chose to stay at Real Madrid because that is how much he loves the club. And so, same with Lucas. When Lucas initially came from Espanyol, came back from Espanyol, I kind of had my doubts. I kind of felt like, you know, he's going to take game time away from Hesse. And I mean, boy, was I wrong on that one. Because Hesse's career and Lucas Vazquez's career have like completely opposite directions. So
I didn't expect anything from Lucas Vazquez. And I knew from the moment he made his debut, he just looked different.
For me, the moment where I changed on Lucas Vazquez is the 2016 Milan final. Because that moment where he, you know, we've talked about this before as well. That moment, that kind of showed me this guy has the mentality to play for Real Madrid. So ever since then, I've been a big, huge fan of Lucas Vazquez. And you know, today was like one of those games where even though he completely shows his passion, where he completely shows his dedication. I mean, Lucas Vazquez for me was the man of the match. Like wins the penalty for the first goal, scores the second goal, and gets the assist for the third goal. So Lucas Vazquez like completely showed up why he deserves to be a Real Madrid. And I think somebody said online that contract year Lucas Vazquez is a different, you know, is different gravy. So luckily for us, I think Real Madrid does like 1 year contract extensions for players above 30. So maybe he's getting a new extension, and I think he should be extended. So maybe next year we get the same Lucas Vazquez.
100%. Let me get to a few other comments, and then I think we should do the ad read quickly more. But thank up every single one of you in the chat. Ashik was mentioning Xavi not accustomed to refs being honest and ethical. Fair enough. Jacob was mentioning if I ever have a kid, if my name Lucas, it'll be hard to live up to his name though. 100%. It's going to be a daunting task. Right. Dennis the Great was mentioning Ala Madrid lovely enter the week, us beating Pep and Xavi in the same week. Yeah, it just doesn't get better than this, can it? Especially, you know, for me, it really, like, starting to watch Madrid in peak Mo Pep era, I never expected our fortunes to turn the way it did, and Xavi and Pep to look as big as a fool, you know, they have done throughout their careers. And Pep not so much, but definitely guys like Xavi, it really is a icing on the cake. Ricardo was mentioning, I think half the ball crossed the line, but I think more than half of the ball has to go over the line for it to be considered a goal. Also, loaning on corners, including our center backs, was off today. Tchouameni, he had a couple of good moments, you know, an excellent recovery against Lewandowski, because if he doesn't get it right, Lewandowski is either through on goal or it is a red, I think, because it was that pivotal of a moment in the game. And Tchouameni, again, you know, had a good pop shot from outside the box, stretching his legs. But in general, like, I don't want Tchouameni to be the guy, you know, if we have an option of Militao and Nacho. Like, we need him in midfield where he can really, you know, dictate games. At centre back, we are obviously missing out on his strengths. And then playing an offside line or, you know, like general centre back positioning is off for Tchouameni. Like, he should be the last resort, in my opinion. Like, if we need to, you know, call him on at centre back. Yeah, Ricardo was mentioning Brahim Diaz is so fearless with the ball at his feet, individually drove at the Barca players when he had no option, really thought his introduction changed the game. Also, big up to Vazquez, man of the match.
I don't disagree with this one. I disagree with this one. For me personally, I think Brahim was poor today. I think he got a couple of chances where he could have played the ball to Joselu, but like, it isn't just about today, but it's been like a trend with him. He's making the wrong decisions always when he gets to the final third, and I think he's trying to be a little bit selfish. At the start of the season, even in January, February, I think Ibrahim was like exceptional because he was playing so selflessly, always making the right decisions, and everybody was in awe of him. But now, right now, like last couple of games, I mean, I struggle to think where he's like making the right decisions. But I mean, I didn't watch the games against City, so I really don't want to judge him on that because, you know, obviously, how can you judge a player when you haven't watched them? But for me, whenever I have seen him in these past few games, I kind of felt like that, you know, his decision-making has been a little suspect.
I'll attribute it to probably the occasion getting to him, but yeah, like I wouldn't slate him as much. I know a couple of instances, like I can you know pick off top of my head where you know I thought Raheem should have done better, but in general he just is someone who is trying to force defenders into mistakes, and that's one thing that I really like about Raheem off the bench. And yeah, like again, guys like this will only grow, will only you know get molded better the more they are you know used throughout the season. And I feel like you know he has still some big moments you know coming in the last month or so. Don't sleep on Raheem, but I completely get you know what you mean more. Ashi was mentioning just before Ricardo said that hate Barca, but they have a special talent in Lamine Yamal. The boy is a special talent. 100%. Yamal just looks like that guy for now, but it all depends upon you know how much they you know eventually end up overplaying him. We hope that's not the case. He's gonna be definitely one of the best players in the world in a few years, and he was giving headaches to Kamavinga. Kamavinga obviously had a couple of 50-50s that he won. A very good last ditch challenge inside the box where he nicked the ball off him was neat. But in general, you know, Kamavinga even tried to kind of show him inside, didn't really work most of the time because Lama just knew Kamavinga didn't have the pace if he tried to you know kind of make it a race.
I think Kamavinga was also hurt by the fact that you know Tchouaméni was playing center back, because Tchouaméni, like you said, his holding of the line was pretty poor. That one chance where I think Kamavinga got the yellow card was where Tchouaméni kind of drops deep, you know, and breaks the line.
Plays everyone offside.
Everybody was onside. Was, like, had stepped up, so it kind of plays Lamine Yamal offside. Sorry, onside. So for me, that's the thing. You know, earlier we were talking about the defense. For me, the biggest miss was for Lamendi, because
100%.
He really dealt with Lamine Yamal like brilliantly when we played against them in the Super Cup. But now Yamal obviously has more experience, more time under his belt, so he's obviously going to improve. Like Ashik said, he's a brilliant talent, he's a special talent, and it's going to be a trouble dealing with him. So Barcelona are lucky to have him. Overall, for me, and I think that this only highlights why we need Flamendi going forward. You know, you can sign the best offensive fullbacks in the world, but when it comes to games like these, you need the biggest of talents. I mean, like, we were talking about Lucas as well. You know, Lucas going forward gives us so much. But when it comes to big games, you need somebody who is also defensively capable, and Carvajal is that guy. And on the other side, we are blessed to have Flamendi. I mean, we could sign the likes of Alfonso Davies or, you know, whoever we want, but we always will need that player that makes a difference in the big games defensively at the fullback position. So Real Madrid going forward have to keep this in mind, you know, when they are handling the left-back situation.
Since we're on left-back, I was super impressed with Fran Garcia as well. We all know that he is a bundle of energy. He just, you know, gives that team a lift. You know, even though he can be a bit of a headless chicken, you know, going back. He just is that very, very effective outlet, you know, if given the space. And yeah, like I've got to big him up for the Fermín López shield block, you could call it either way, but superb interception to you know kind of keep the game level. Fran just like I used to really think that you know he is nowhere near the quality we need, but I'm super happy, you know, whenever he has come on from the bench, you know, like after you know a couple of erratic games on the trot, when he was kind of you know basically became a fringe player again, you know, second to Mendy. After that, like when the pressure was off, I think he has come on and delivered what was asked of him, what the game asked of him. And yeah, super happy with Fran as well. Straight Football was mentioning Jude Ghosted again. I think it's sarcastic, but pick up Straight Football. Ricardo was mentioning the Kroos Modric combo crippled our midfielders almost entirely. Fede, as usual, had to be a two-in-one player to cover their weakness, along with Vinny's poor decision-making had me fuming at times. It's a given. We all know it's a disaster waiting to happen. Modric and Kroos starting together completely gives us the least amount of control possible. It just, you know, I think comes with the territory. But I don't think Modric was terrible. But again, he played a lot of passes into no man's land. Was caught under caught in possession, sleeping a couple of times. But I thought Modric performed better than I expected, because I was expecting the worst. Maybe I thought my bar was way too low.
For me personally, when Kroos and Modric play, it's never about individual players. I think individually they do what they've always done, but it's always about what they can't do, and it's like give a defensive stability. I think that was missing, especially. But then the thing is, Barcelona didn't really have the pace to threaten us the way City did when we played against them last season. I felt like Barcelona's attack was more geared towards Lamine Yamal, and I was kind of surprised when Xavi took him off in the midweek against PSG, because I felt like if I had been the manager of Barcelona, that Lamine Yamal would be the last player I take off because of how good he is.
I mentioned it in the chat as well, like that was the biggest decision that changed the game.
I think Real Madrid, Barcelona's attack against Real Madrid was always geared towards the left, so it wasn't probably taken advantage of as much as we could have hoped for. And I think Ancelotti knew that, because they probably have scouted him as well, and Lewandowski is kind of like, he kind of didn't look at the best of his forms today, so that wasn't taken advantage of as much as we would have expected. But I think going forward, we have to be very careful about playing Kroos and Modric together. I hope it never happens again, because we have seen what happens when both of them play together. Defensive stability is already gone. And I hope, Ancelotti's sake, there was actually something wrong with Nacho, which is why he didn't play. Otherwise, Nacho should have played. It was criminal decision to not play him.
I think Modric's decision was basically a send-off gift, I think, from Carlo. Final Clásico. There you go. You start with your mate for one last ride, probably.
I mean, the rumor is that Nacho is also going to leave, so he deserved to start as well, because especially after the performance that he put up against City, because I've seen the highlights and he was completely harassing Erling Haaland.
I think Nacho is going to definitely start the big games, Bayern, probably.
But
Militao is back. He looked decent. Had a couple of great challenges. Looks like he, is slowly getting back his bite as well. But I think Mo, it's best to run our Manscaped ad again. Pick a Manscaped
this
every single time.
This episode is brought to you by the Spring Cleaning Champions Manscaped. And this season, we partnered up with them to make sure everyone's grass is cut up to standard, because Xavi has been complaining and it's been annoying our secretary. So join the 10 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with this special offer. Go to manscaped.com, use code LBR20 to get 20% off and free shipping at checkout. So introducing this season's MVP is the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra. It's a trimmer with two blade heads, one to just take a little off the top, or the foil blade, basically to go super smooth. And you can use this in the shower. It has two bright LED spotlights, so there's no accidents in the shower. And it's waterproof, it's easy to clean. You can put this in your travel bag, in your drawer. So to get the full grooming experience, you should get the Beard Hedger Pro Kit and the Handyman Electric Face Shaver. Basically, you get extra parts to really create your signature look and clean up your neckline. So use code LBR20 at checkout to get 20% off and free shipping. That's LBR20 to get 20% off and free shipping at manscaped.com. And thank you for watching. Back to the video.
Big up Manscaped, big up Doris. You heard the woman. LBR20, you get 20% off and free shipping on manscaped.com. Obviously, the pioneers of men's grooming. They have a brilliant catalog of all the products. If you think of something, they probably has it. Ranging from trimmers, loungewear, boxers, beard balms, you name it. Trimmers, Manscaped is pretty well equipped when it comes to men's products. Go check them out. Show them some love. Show us some love. Right. Who should we move on to next? The Vinicius Pen. Like, I wasn't super confident. I'll just say that. Him.
I wasn't either. For me personally, I kind of felt like Jude should have taken it. Or maybe Luka should have taken it himself, especially given his, you know, two penalties that we have seen. But, I mean, he kind of buried it and, you know.
I think it was kind of to, you know, stop his mini drought, from boiling over. Or probably, you know, his mates did him a favor. Taker. Isn't it Jude?
No, it's Vinny.
How's it Vinny?
I remember Ancelotti saying earlier in the season that if Vinny's on the pitch, he's going to be the first one to take it. So
That's absolute blasphemy. Like, coming from a man who is as experienced as Carlo, like, what is he thinking?
I mean, is this man... one season, next season, is probably going to be, you know, the one who must not be named. So,
bro, imagine we have a critical pen in the semi-final and Vinny takes it. Like, everybody's basically covering their eyes. Like,
I mean,
they wouldn't have
everybody else has missed just as much as Vinny has missed. So at this point, I'm just lost, you know.
I think Jude Bellingham is the safe bet. Bellingham is the safe bet.
Hasn't
he just
missed
has...
a panel this season as well?
No, I don't think so.
I don't know, man. I think he has. I don't know. Maybe
when? With England, probably?
Earlier
not with
the
us.
Season,
not
wasn't really, yeah. I mean, almost everybody has missed a panel with us. Even Rodrigo missed it. Modric.
Anyway, I have absolutely no... I've no composure to watch Vinny take pens. He doesn't look confident either. You know, you can just see it in his face. He's not that guy.
I mean,
he's not the ice cold man.
For me personally, the thing is, like, I don't trust any of these people. Because for me, the one guy that I used to trust for taking penalties was Rodrigo. But for some reason, he's fallen down to third or fourth in the pecking order, and he missed that one chance, and suddenly everybody decided they're not going to take penalties anymore. So I don't really get it. I'm just waiting for next season to roll around, you know. The guy who must not be named comes in and starts taking penalties, and finally we get someone who can score.
Vinicius pass to Vasquez as well. Again, brilliant. He just has that knack to, cross the ball between the wings.
Yeah,
so well.
Vinny, even that pass that he's developed outside the foot, and this one was from the left foot. So his crossing, he has really come leaps and bounds this season. Maybe, like you said, his decision making in the box maybe has regressed a little bit, but his passing and his crossing and his ability to play his teammates in space, like, has come leaps and bounds, man. Vinicius, especially ever since we saw him pull that off against Girona, you know, for that Jude goal. I think he's really pulled that off again and again and again to show that wasn't a fluke. We have been unlucky in that nobody has been at the end of it, because I think today he played that one pass for Rodrigo as well, where Rodrigo was late to it. And that pass for Lucas Vasquez's goal was also simply, splendid. I think when we're talking about Vinicius, we do have to give him credit, because this season, whenever we have needed him, he has kind of stepped up, you know, even against Valencia.
100%. If he doesn't score, he's definitely chipping in
with
an assist, for sure.
And today as well, I think there have been countless number of games where he's really, especially in the second half, especially ever since he's come back from injury, Vinicius has always delivered on the big stage. So I think we have to give credit to him for that.
100%, he deserves all the plaudits. Like, I am a bit more extra critical when he does it, take his chances, is because I expect that from him. Like, if I thought of him as another also ran flashy winger, like, I wouldn't ask him to basically be a lot more clinical. But yeah, Vasquez, brilliant finish. I think he kind of fluffed the shot a bit. You know, it was hit into the ground. The contact probably, took Ter Stegen completely out of the equation. You know, maybe if it was too sweet, it could have, gone over the bar, or, probably, Ter Stegen could have made it. But the fact that it kind of, hit the floor and then, went in, added that extra bit of spice to the finish. But yeah, Vasquez, again, my man of the match, brilliant. Lorenz, Paddy, we talked about it. Should someone have done better to close off Yamal? Probably should have. But cool finish from Firmin. We talked already about Lunin, his batting should improve. I think it leaves us with the Jude finish. Like, how happy were you that Hosselu kind of left it? Because while watching it in real time, I think it was a brilliant backheel. Like, I'm going crazy. Hosselu basically,
flicking it
off.
He was trying to flick it. He couldn't pull it off.
Yeah, he couldn't pull it off. He didn't leave it intentionally. That's what I was thinking. Right? I was thinking, like, man, this guy turned into prime Benzema when we needed him the most. Like, I was going berserk, but Jude's finish, man. The calmness, the power behind the shot, basically, you know, hit the roof of the net. Tostegan, no chance. It just goes to show Jude Bellingham has that extra something when you call upon him, especially in big games. Like, this man can just decide games. Against City, we saw the same thing again. It didn't really, you know, end with him putting a chance away for a goal, but the way he kind of set up the goal was again, the big game player.
For me, I think Tchouaméni said something in one of the interviews that was really important. He said that Jude Bellingham plays in the first minute as he does in the 90th minute. So he has that thing about, you know, he keeps on going and keeps on trying to contribute and tries to make something happen. And I think that run, especially because he held his run and then ran into space, he had a lot of space to take advantage of. And that intelligence of mind to know that maybe I have to be in this space when maybe if it doesn't come off of, you know, Joselu, maybe I have a chance to take advantage of. Not everybody can do that, nor everybody does that. I think Jude Bellingham did it. Like you said, this guy has an X factor. I mean, that is why Real Madrid were willing to pay more than 100 million euros for him to come to Real Madrid from Dortmund. Because when, if you look at his trophy hall, you wouldn't be thinking that this is that guy. But when you watch him actually play on that field, you know, and deliver in certain situations, you think, yeah, man, this is that guy. So Real Madrid are incredibly lucky to have him. And, you know, we have seen his impact this season. And there was this one comment, I don't know if it's sarcastic or real or whatever, there have been comments on, like, you know, social media about him and about him ghosting and everything. But I think the important thing to remember is, like, Jude Bellingham isn't just, you can't quantify Jude Bellingham's performance just based on goals and assists. I think Farouk used to say this earlier this season as well, there's going to be a time, you know, Farouk and I also have mentioned it, there's going to be a time where Jude Bellingham's goals aren't going to be there, but then there's going
but
to be
more,
that performance.
I genuinely think, like, next season, because of the way the team is set up, his goals might be something that is a cherry on the cake, right? But for me, I don't think, like, he is in his optimal physical shape, right? I think that has contributed to him not scoring as much, not
for
making
me, like, for
as
me,
many late
I'll
runs.
Just say this again. For me, Jude Bellingham's performances shouldn't be just be considered about goals and assists because, you know, this guy is giving you a lot more. He's going back.
No, I know that.
He's dropping deep.
No, I'm just talking
balls.
To the people that think, you know, like, why he has fallen off is because, I mean, the people who basically say that, you know, goals only make him, like what you were saying. For me, I think his overall performances has always been good. But the very fact that he can add so much more was what I was kind of, you know, mildly critical of. But yeah.
I mean, I think it's difficult to say that Jude Bellingham is, like, underperforming because of his injuries and stuff. Because we've already seen, like, maybe the goal isn't there. Maybe the assist isn't there. But then rest of everything is there. Because he's still going past his defender. He's still, you know, bamboozling his markers. He's still going back, he's still dropping down deep and winning balls in, you know, areas that you don't really expect a player who's playing as an attacking midfielder to do. He's doing all of that. So that also takes a lot of physicality. So you can't really put down to him being in pain or not being at his optimum condition when he's pulling all those things off. He's still taking the ball in deeper areas and driving with it forward. So that is there. For me, what I think has changed is the fact that teams are probably defending him better. And, you know, sometimes the thing is, like, there are patches where everything that you touch comes off, and sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah, 100%.
So for me, it's just that. But, you know, Jude Bellingham, the rest of everything has been there. Even before this, even when he didn't score the goal. Yeah, maybe you can be critical about him not getting, you know, because the thing is, this Real Madrid team has three players who can score, Rodrigo, Vinicius, and Bellingham. None of them is, like, your primary goal scorer. None of them is that player when you look at him, you go, yeah, man, this guy's going to score, come what may happen, you know. Nobody's a striker. So in this situation, we need everybody to chip in. And I think that the criticism where you felt that maybe, I don't mean you, I mean the general you, where somebody felt like, you know, Jude Bellingham isn't scoring, so he deserves some criticism. I kind of understand that. But then we can't really go back and say that Jude Bellingham is ghosting or anything.
Yeah.
Because he's always, you know, in other areas, he's always pitched in. So for me, I don't really want to be too critical of him. Because, you know, he's always done well, in my opinion. But then today, is getting that winning goal, you know, it gives you the original belly goal feeling back. You know, like, you kind of feel that belly goal is back. So it kind of takes you back to the start of the season where Bellingham was scoring for fun. And against Barcelona, getting a 90th minute winner, I mean, who doesn't enjoy that?
He did it. He dunked on Barcelona for the second time this season. Like, I mean, Xavi has to hold that. Like, basically he would have had nightmares about the first Clásico in Bellingham. Like, he has won as a farewell gift, so I think this Clásico couldn't have ended better, man. Just the sheer amount of people that really thought that, you know, like, signing Jude Bellingham would be surplus to requirement. Yes, he's a good talent, but would he add something to the team? Well, he is basically one of the biggest reasons why we are leading La Liga by 11 points and on course to win the title on May 12th against Granada. It just is set up to be his year, isn't it? Like, it only needs probably a couple more goals. One in the semis against Bayern, either leg, and a goal in the final, and he is a lock-on for the Ballon d'Or, irrespective of what happens in the Euros, I reckon. Unless someone like Harry Kane,
for me,
you know,
I think
goes on to have...
The Ballon d'Or is going to play a big... the Euros are going to play a big decision. The Euros is there, the Copa America is there. I don't think winning the Champions League, especially given the fact that there hasn't been one player who's been incredibly decisive to say that this guy is, you know... This guy is the
But I think Jude Bellingham is the closest you can...
On the flip side, you could just turn around and say that about Kylian Mbappe.
In a league where the title is basically
given... It
doesn't matter,
man. He's
the
leading goal scorer for the Champions League.
Well, let's see what he does
for
in the semi-finals.
For me personally, I think if PSG wins, I think then... You know, God forbid, if PSG wins, then I think Kylian Mbappe is probably going to be a lock for the Ballon d'Or.
Don't say shit like that, man.
Otherwise, it's going to go to the Euros, sadly. As much as I think that, you know, one of our players should win, I would even put forward Rudiger's name, because Rudiger's performance this season, especially, you know, defensively.
Yeah.
I think it's high time.
But he's not going to...
I think it's high time.
Defender's not
going to
win.
It's difficult for him to win. I mean, if Real Madrid win the Champions League, a lot is going to be down to Rudiger. I mean, when the most 100%. Important moment of the season was, like, when we were in the penalty shootout, it was Rudiger who stepped up and scored the winning penalty, right? So that has got to count for something. But then,
but no chance. He's
there's
winning.
Also be going to be chances where, you know, let's see what happens against Bayern, first of all, before we start counting our eggs.
Like, I ain't taking Bayern lightly.
Yeah, and, but then Rudiger, for me, has, like, stood up and been consistent throughout the season. He's always delivered. So, I mean, he also has to be in the reckoning. Jude, obviously, like you said, also has to be in the reckoning. But for me personally, the way things are right now, I don't think anybody's going to win this award based on club football. It's going to be based on how, you know, Champions League to an extent, but then also how the Euros go, especially France win. PSG don't win the Champions League. I could see Griezmann with a shout.
Griezmann, yeah?
Yeah.
I know he has been decent, but I think
Griezmann
has completely fallen off.
Griezmann has been good for Atleti.
He has fallen off second half of the season.
Second? No, man, come on. Second half of the season, he scored against us in the Copa.
I don't think he has really...
No, man,
second half of the season
Griezmann
is probably after February, right? Do you count January into the first half of the season?
I mean, it's after 19 games, right?
Is it? No, I'm just talking about in, like, the first six months. Like from
the season is like 10 months, man.
September, October, November, December, Jan, Feb. Feb is the 6 months of the season. Like, the season begins August, mid.
The second half
20,
of the season,
right?
Is just March, April, May. It's 3 months.
I don't know. But for me,
irrespective of everything,
in general,
I think Griezmann, if France wins the Euros, Griezmann is going to be a big shout. And provided,
like,
PSG don't win the Champions League.
He doesn't impress me. Like, I get why he had, you know,
bro,
a reputation
the
in the
vote,
first half of the season.
The day you get the vote, you can say stuff like that. But right now, I think he impresses the people who vote.
Fair enough. Griezmann, like, I don't think he's anywhere near. Maybe he makes the podium. Maybe he makes the top five. But
Mbappe
is a big threat.
For me personally, you know, no matter what rankings goal puts out, for me, the thing is, right now, I think Kylian Mbappe is probably the favorite.
Yeah, fuck the goal. Like, who even reads goal articles, man? Like, I used to read goal when
I mean,
was in
goal
school,
is the only one who says Jude Bellingham is the top of the Ballon d'Or ratings, probably.
Like, I don't need a fucking power ranking to know, you know, where Jude is at this season, especially if we go on to win the double. But fingers crossed, Bayern is going to be a big test. Nobody, like, only the fool will take Bayern lightly in the Champions League. We have to really be up for it, you know. They'll be up for it. It's going to be a big tie. And the final again, Dortmund, Like, I hope we don't face Dortmund, because as much as Dortmund might look weaker on paper, you never know. Against the weaker sides, we just know, you know, we don't perform as well as we do against someone who really is an intimidating opponent. So I would prefer to pay, you know, face PSG, the Mbappe showdown, Mbappe Classico. But yeah, Bayern,
it's gonna be a battle for the custody of Mbappe.
Yeah,
but man, if we do end up facing PSG, let's just, you know, imagine that, touch wood. If we do end up facing PSG and PSG lose, do you think they're gonna join Real Madrid in that case?
Yeah, 100%, 100%. But I don't think it's a foregone conclusion. But if his mind is made up, I don't think a loss in the Champions League
final. I don't know if you know about it, but do you know about Kevin Durant?
He's a basketball player, right?
Okay, so this guy, he went to the final, like, I think he went to the conference finals and he lost to Golden State. And Golden State was like this big team where they set the records of number of wins in a season. And then he lost to them and he joined Golden State the next season. So there was this huge backlash about him where everybody called him the snake and everything. So for me, the way these guys are, they're influenced a lot by the basketball players. Because NBA, I think, has a lot of influence on European football players right now. You know, players playing in Europe, I mean, Vinicius, Kylian Mbappe, and all these guys, they do follow it a lot, Tchouameni. So for me, it will be interesting to see if Real Madrid and PSG face off against each other, PSG lose, I could see him renewing with PSG.
Like, at this point, he very well knows that if he renews with PSG and continues playing in next year to be called the McDonald's Uber League, I mean, McDonald's Liga, because Uber League would be nice as well. But yeah, he just knows his career is finished if he, you know, stays at PSG. He will make the right decision. If not us, then someone good. Ashok was mentioning tonight, Real Madrid doesn't play the finals, so they win finals. Obviously, but in football, no chance, man. Like, I'll tell you for a fact, you know, even in the preview, I might say it once at the end. Like, I wouldn't even brag about it because, yeah, just don't jinx it, guys. Please, yeah? Just play it calm, play it cool. We have to get over the line because if we don't, we look back at the season, irrespective of what anyone thinks. This is supposed to be a transition season, no striker season. I don't care. I don't give a fuck. If we fumble the bag in the Champions League, it's going to be on us. The spotlight is going to be on us and we'll have to look ourselves in the mirror for the next 2 months. Right? I don't want that to be the case. I just want us to put the title to bed and then talk. Also, big up every single one of you in the chat. I think we have covered, you know, pretty much everything, you know, regarding Clásico. Barcelona is finished. I repeat, finished. They came in with a game plan to kind of, you know, take the game to us. Yeah, and they got what they deserved, and you know how we basically showed character, determination, and composure to come back twice from adversity and seal the 3 points was nothing short of commendable. Especially after the week we had. 17 of you here. If you guys are new here, you guys should know the drill by now. Smash the likes and don't forget to subscribe to the channel. We're on the road to 2K. For the people who didn't know, and for the people who, you know, who are listening on our audio platforms, we got the absolute pleasure to work with BBC. It wasn't something that I was looking forward to, you know, on the calendar. Coming into the season, but yeah, it was super surprising. After the City game, they basically reached out to us and we had the immense pleasure to work with BBC Sport, you know, talking some stuff about Mbappe, Jude Bellingham, the upcoming Euros and the Bernabeu, the remodeled Bernabeu as well. So you watch this space. Hopefully you guys can see, let's be real. On BBC live television, it's like it's super humbling. Like I can't put it into words what all of us, you know, basically, you know, we were on cloud nine, to say the least. And big up Sid for actually, you know, he had to kind of cancel his vacay midway and, you know, do this. So yeah, big him up every single time. I'm pretty sure he's talking to people outside the stadium still. But yeah, our team in Madrid has been working super hard to get you guys top-notch content. So if you guys like, the fan cams like, you know, the stuff that we're doing with the fans outside the stadium and stuff, you know, smash the likes and, yeah, like, share it to your fellow Madridistas, man. Like, the more people knows, the better it is. Yeah, pick up yourself again, Mo. Hopefully, when will I see you next? Champions League post-match, yeah? Fingers crossed if you can make it. You
know, Champions League post-match, I don't know, but maybe after the Sociedad game. Friday, right?
After
probably post-match.
After the Sociedad, post-match, yeah. Game, yeah. We have also a couple of specials lined up with some friends of ours, you know, from the UK, hopefully Dobbs or, you know, Ford will join us for kind of a, you know, Harry Kane, Eric Dier chat and kind of, you know, looking ahead to the Bayern leg. And we also have a big preview coming on with the Bayern view from the UK. Brilliant lad, Liam. I had the pleasure to go on his channel, I think, last week. So we'll be linking up pretty often as well. Watch this space. Big couple of weeks for us, man. I hope it goes well, and I hope, you know, we get rewarded for the incredible determination and persistence we have shown this season. And Carlo, for reinventing himself, he deserves a double, 100%. You guys know the drill. Smash the likes on the way out, and go check out Manscaped, LBR20, to get 20% off and free shipping. So until next time, people, Hala Madrid.
Hola Madrid.